cabbages are quite high in sulforaphanes. And sulforaphane, in botany terms, really, is the immune system of that plant. It means that when the pest comes along to eat it, it's too bitter. But it also means that when the viral infections or the bacterial infections come along, the acidity of the sulfur actually breaks down their structures and they can't proliferate into the plant. Turns out when we eat it, it does the same for us. So sulfur is really good to boost the human immune system. And eating cabbages in particular, because they have that high quality, is really good at the time of the year when they're in season to help us ward off bacterial infections in autumn and viral infections in wintertime. And if you look at the whole thing with kind of fermented foods, that the lactic acid and stuff, again, that's contained in the cabbage, improve the bacterial stuff that's there. It wipes out the bad bacteria in the stomach and allows the good bacteria to grow. So if we're modifying cabbages for a longer shelf life, what are we doing? What are we doing to the sulforaphanes? If we're trying to make them resistant to diseases, well, it's like with humans, you know. If you go out as a child and you're exposed to the dog licking your face and the muck in the field, you're going to be exposed to the pathogens and your immune system is going to build up the army to deal with. If all of these plants are already being bred to be resistant to certain things, they don't produce the chemicals. So it's like that with your lavender. If you're growing lavender because you want to be able to get at the antiviral properties that are in its aromatic oils, if it's not exposed to stressful situations, it doesn't produce them. So if you're growing under polytunnels, it doesn't work. So how we grow our food and how we grow our herbs, they need to be stressed to produce their chemistry. That's the beautiful thing about nature, is really when we're ingesting something from another source, it's like the old thing of that, you know, you're taking in the power of the plant. You know, this is why, you know, you look at early societies where trees were worshipped or plants were worshipped or snakes or whatever. It was that thing about you adopted the energy of the plant. Modern science has proved that it's a nutritional thing or a phytochemical thing, and that has an impact on the enzymes in our body or the pH of our blood or what endorphins are released from the brain. So it's that connection with nature is much more fundamental than just appreciating the view. Now, you go back to the earliest days of kind of, you know, people talking about kind of hugging trees and kind of connecting with tree worship. Here in Ireland, we would have had, you know, the Om language, which is based on all the different strikes, each relating to 13 trees. And back then we had 13 months because Halloween was a whole month in itself. There's a thing now, Shirin Yoko, I think it's called, which is the Japanese term for forest bathing. Now, we've been doing this since the Iron Age. You know, if you read about, you know, Cucullin and stuff like that, after battle, he went and he walked in the forest. So what is it that walking in the forest does? Well, the green slows down your systolic blood pressure. That helps remove cortisol and stress markers from the body. But certain trees, specifically pine trees, give off terpenes. Now, terpenes is what people would be using aromatherapeutic oils for, also CBD oil. They have a coating system upon receptors in the skin and receptors within the brain that are deeply pain relieving and deeply sedative. So taking a walk, now you're not going to fall asleep halfway through the forest, but what it does is it resets your brain from alpha fast waves down to theta waves, which is the same experience you get from deep meditation. Yeah. So a walk in the woods actually, you know, is the best detox you can get.
Do you think we can rekindle that spirituality? I mean, within modern religions like Christianity or Islam, you know, do you think we can rekindle some of that connection with nature?
I don't know. I would hope so. And there are certain threads within each religion that would have held on to the nature aspect. The thing that I would worry about is if everybody is just purely focused on good deeds for their soul and getting to the afterlife, are they respecting their present life and the nature that we share that current life with? But like that, Buddha had an appreciation of nature. Jesus does mention, consider the lilies and stuff. So there are threads and traces there. And I think in Ireland, we were very successful at doing it. Even in terms of some of the earliest stuff I heard about St. Kevin and the board landing in his hand and all that. People heard about St. Francis of Assisi and what a rebel, you know, for the start, you know. But the fact that he got reduced to being kind of patron saints of your pets kind of misses the message. But here in Ireland, with lots of air monks who kind of took to the Skellig and took to Glendalough and they immerse themselves in nature. And that there's an older tradition there. If there's the poem about Mad Sweeney, you know, the king who goes crazy and he goes and he becomes a hermit in the woods. There's a transformative aspect that happens through that. So his dark night of the soul, he took to nature to become healed. This is the remediative effect of nature. I mean, if you look at the rise of horticultural therapy, well, that poem is really, really ancient. It's in our tradition. That was saying to people, embrace nature and nature will cure you. You can still have your relationship with God within that because God is nature. Yeah. You know, that's the reality of it. And nature is human nature and human nature is actual nature. So it's, yeah, you look at Scottus and stuff like that where he was talking about nature too. There are threads of it here. We are very connected. The fact that the shamrock is our national symbol, that kind of says it all. We are or have been for so long a rural, agricultural, nature-based society. I know that's changing and, you know, everybody wants to work for Google and walk around all day with a cup of coffee in their hand, drink it and drink it, get rid of it and then take time to look around, you know, feel the sun on your skin, feel the ambient temperature. That's a mindfulness practice, just being connected there in with nature, coming into your now, lowering your stress markers. So we do have in Ireland a very spiritual connection with the land. All of our seasons and our celebrations are connected in with that. The eight festivals of light, that even in terms of Halloween and Halloween being Samhain and being a harvest festival. I know that kind of got lost and it's about kind of trick or treat and there's a little bit of a greed element in that. But the thing of like kind of bobbing for apples and stuff, if we start to bring that back, if we introduce that to our kids and our grandkids and keep some of the cultural stuff alive, then in an appreciation for nature in itself, an appreciation for where our food comes from, in appreciation for respecting the planet, there's a natural spirituality that actually flows from that because there's an awareness and an enlightenment and a pure connection in to what I would call the source of everything. That happens in that, you know. For me, when I garden, I mean, it's a Zen practice in a way because it's a total distraction. You know, I'm focused on whatever I'm focused on. And if you look kind of the Zen monks went off and they start raking gravel as a way to meditate. You know, they have a particular breathing practice that they do. There's a breath control mechanism in how they do it. How did Irish monks do it? Well, they went and they took a look at all of the plants that had a healing principle and they grew them and they shared them. You know, and they took that into Europe and they shared that around Europe. Lots of the medicinal knowledge that we have is from here, you know, and it's from Irish monks in other regions around Europe. That thing of officinalis, that comes from the officiates, the room at the back of the monastery where all of the healing herbs were kept. And when you went and you visited to get your healing remedy, you got a little stamp on your hand to say which one you should get. And that's where the official seal of approval comes from. You know, there you go. Like, that's sanctified, that the actual herb is sanctified as a legitimate medicine.
Yeah, interesting. And I mean, do you think, you mentioned St. Francis and you talked about what a rebel he was. I mean, do you think it's hopeful that the Pope, the first Pope to take the name Francis, took the name Francis?
Yeah, you know, and I think that's probably by intent. But it's like anything, it takes such a long, long time for subtle changes to be fully appreciated. And for, you know, the ripples. But there is that first moment where it's just one drop. You know, and it does take time before you can fully appreciate to see how things move out. So it will be interesting to see over the next couple of years how approaches change and attitudes shift in the face of really a global secularism, really, when you think about it. I mean, commerce is winning. And I don't know if within that, if that's people's pure drive. I'd worry about, you know, if your only concern is how many likes you got on Facebook in the day, really, where's your head at? Before you even get to where is your soul at, where's your head at? And the psychological issues that are kind of cropping up in relation to new technology and new approaches to people wanting to have personal fame and personal high status. And it's all tied up in a kind of a me, 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 me. How do you combat that? Now, maybe when you are out in nature and you are connected in with stuff, you know, I would work a lot as a horticultural therapist. I would work an awful lot with people with physical difficulties and disabilities, but I would work a lot with people who also would have mental well-being issues. Now, by mental well-being issues, I don't just mean chronic depression or schizophrenia or clinically diagnosed conditions, but just people who have kind of general anxiety about stuff. And that's because the world we live in is such fast-paced. You have your bills to pay, you have stuff to keep up with, and it is, you know, when your phone is in your hand, it's there all of the time. The world does not leave you. Where is your moment of prayer? Where is your moment of contemplation? So getting out in nature, whether it's building a community garden, whether it's walking down on your allotment, whether it's going for a walk in a forest, or even going out to the ocean. And there's all this thing about the ions that are in the air in scenic places actually have a positive effect on decreasing the stress levels within the body. It's not just that it's scenic. It's physiologically having an impact. So that's the great worship of nature as such. And within that, then, how do you find the God and the goodness within you? And then how do you radiate that into the rest of the world?